Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Why do so many people feel today stressed, disconnected, overwhelmed, even when they're doing everything right? What if the real problem starts much earlier than we think? Today, we're having a conversation that affects every single one of us, our mental health, our relationships, and the way we experience life. I'm joined today with Ronald Goldman. He is an award-winning psychologist and author of The Empathy Evolution, where he explores the deeper origins of personal and social challenges, and more importantly, how we can prevent them. So today we're going to break down and actually find out what helps you understand what's going on and what you actually can do about it. You know, I'm so excited to have you on the show, Ronald. You know, welcome to our show. And I'm really excited to just like dive right into this because, you know, so many people, you know, struggle in so many ways. And, you know, the things that you have to show us is very valuable. So let's start here. Why do you think so many people today feel more stressed and disconnected than ever?
I'm glad to join you. And the answer to your question is it generally has to do with early experiences. Most people don't remember much before they're 3 or 4 years old.
Right.
Okay. So what they don't remember is very likely because they weren't having their needs met. They were subjected to common American cultural practices in terms of childcare. And, you know, and when trauma is involved, trauma definition includes something that's overwhelmingly painful to us. Emotionally, psychologically. And the way we survive trauma, and this happens without intention, it gets dissociated is a psychological term. It means it gets disconnected from consciousness.
Right.
And so, though we don't recall trauma, it becomes stored in the body long term.
Right.
And that storage of this trauma results in, again, less awareness of our feelings and connections to others and our past histories. So that's a start of how this is going to go.
Yeah, that's so true. 90% of our brain is in our subconscious, in the back of our brain. Only 10% is logic. And so many people suffer from, you know, events that they don't even remember traumatically because it's in the stored in the subconscious. But then sometimes people could actually say something and you can trigger somebody and they have no idea why they were just triggered. And it has to do with things that that happened to them that were unpleasant in their life. Now, what are we missing when we try to solve these problems by ourselves?
Well, again, we're missing the history. We're thinking, and I'm not suggesting that some form of treatment or support in the present can't be useful. Of course, it can be useful, but it doesn't get to the origins.
Right.
And part of the background for me in how I became aware of this was I participated in a type of psychotherapy. Sometimes it's called body psychotherapy. Another term for it is breath work. And this type of psychotherapy is very useful and important to help someone become aware of early experiences. So, I mean, I remember a time when I actually, and it doesn't happen necessarily in the first session.
Right.
It's a process.
Yeah.
It can take months. to relive a lot of these early experiences. So I remember a time when I was in a therapy session and I was experiencing being born. How's that for an early experience?
That's an early experience, yeah.
So I was pushing and pushing, trying to get out of my mother's body. I'd get tired and I'd rest, and I'd push some more, and I'd get tired, and then I'd push some more, and I had a lot of trouble getting out. Finally, after going through this several times, I got out, obviously. And later, after this psychotherapy session, I contacted my mother and I asked her for contact information for the obstetrician that was at my birth. And she gave me his contact information. I sent him an inquiry about what notes he had on my birth because I wondered if my experience in psychotherapy was somehow related to anything in his notes. So he sent me the notes, and one thing he sent me that surprised me quite a bit was my mother was given, and this was many decades ago now, my mother was given general anesthesia before my birth, which in those days was not uncommon. So, of course, my mother was not conscious during my birth, so she couldn't assist me at all. And so what this did was it supported the authenticity of my therapeutic experience by learning more about what was going on or not going on during my birth. So I found that to be very significant. What else can I tell you?
That's amazing. Now, when you say body psychotherapy, is body psychotherapy different than the regular process of psychotherapy, or is it the same thing?
What's very, very different? Because the so-called talk therapy is we talk what we're aware of. Okay, we're not obviously aware of unconscious feelings and experiences. As I think I said, the body stores what the mind forgets. So these unconscious experiences stored in the body are retrievable and can be relived, as I'd say I relived my birth. And in the process of my psychotherapy, I relived many, many early experiences, traumatic, many of them. And it's very helpful to, again, release these early experiences so that we can be more in the present here and now. Because otherwise, keeping these traumas inside us diminishes our awareness, our sensitivity to our feelings and other people's feelings. So I found it to be a very valuable process. And I recommend it to others. And there are various forms of it today that are very useful in improving the quality of life of the people that participate.
That's very interesting. Now, you know, is the process itself different? So one is talk therapy, and how would you do body psychotherapy? How would that, what would be the process of that?
Well, the process is somewhat simple in terms of the way it worked out. The patient is asked to, for example, lie down on your back, and you're on a soft mat, so it's comfortable. And you do deep breathing. Okay, now restricting our breathing is the way we restrict access to these unrealized traumas and early experiences. But by getting support from the therapist, keep breathing, breathe deeper, let your body move, let your hands, arms, back, legs, let your body lead the way, not your mind.
I like that.
So again, it's over a period of time. As a patient allows this to happen, trust the body to connect with these early experiences. It happens. It happens because we're like opening the therapeutic doors to our experiences that are unrecognized because of early traumas.
Right.
And it's so effective to do this. And I became so much more, as I think I've said, sensitive to my feelings and other people's feelings. And that humans are designed to be sensitive to their feelings and other people's feelings. And that, of course, facilitates connection and relationships and empathy,
Yes.
of course, which, of course, gets much minimized by people who are not sensitive to their own feelings.
That's very true. Now, we talked about solving problems. So most advice focuses on managing symptoms, but you talk about the origins of these issues. What are the real root causes that people don't see?
Well, the root causes often have something to do with common American childcare practices. And I want to say that most, if not all, of these childcare practices are not common in other countries.
Right.
And another factor is here, is we tend to care for our children the way we were cared for when we were children. So it can be said that we pass on the pain.
Right.
But again, it's not with an intention of passing on pain. There's an assumption that the way we were cared for was the right and best thing to do. There's also the assumption that because something is a cultural practice, that means it's common in the culture.
Right.
And if it's so common, then it must be the right and best thing to do. That goes along with people's perspective of these things. And again, as I think I mentioned, other countries don't do these things.
Right.
I want to mention a study that is very significant in terms of demonstrating the differences between early children's behaviors in this country compared to early children's behaviors in another country that doesn't conform to our cultural practices. They do more of what's natural. So here the study is of preschool children comparing their tendency toward aggressive behavior of children in France compared to children in the United States. And the study showed that in France, 1% of preschool children exhibited aggressive behavior. If you want to take a guess on the American percent, or do you want me to just go for it?
Oh, I think it's a lot higher, but I'm not really sure how much the percentage is, but it's definitely a lot higher.
Okay. In the United States, the percent of preschool children that exhibited aggressive behavior was 29%.
Gosh, that's insanity.
It's so significantly worse than the French children. So again, that's very strong evidence that the early experiences of these preschool children were very different, and again, conform to which country they were raised in.
Right.
So that's and another thing that's important, and maybe we'll get to this more, the quality of the mother-child relationship. This is the first and fundamental intimate relationship. And research shows that a strong bond between the mother and infant contributes to the child's emotional and social development. The child's self-confidence and empathy are also connected with the quality of the relationship with the mother. Significantly, The mother-infant relationship provides a foundation for the child's development and future relationships. The emotional bond connecting the mother and infant is called attachment. When the mother is available, sensitive, loving, and responsive to the infant's needs, attachment quality is high. This is called secure attachment. Research demonstrates that securely attached infants are more sensitive, curious, sociable, and have empathy as toddlers and preschoolers. So then the question, which is related here, is what reduces attachment quality? Well, it's many factors that can disrupt the relationship between the mother and the infant. It can be disrupted by the mother not wanting the birth. This is very relevant in this country because about 3 out of 8 births in the United States are unwanted. The bond can also be disrupted by the infant being separated from the mother. Unmet biological and psychological needs, maltreatment, and associated traumas. When the mother is not available, sensitive, loving, and responsive to the infant's needs, the infant's distress is not alleviated and attachment quality is low. This is called insecure attachment. Although common in the United States, it is often unrecognized or misunderstood. Infants cope with this trauma by numbing to their needs and emotions. Consequently, they do not cry, and mothers mistakenly believe they are fine. The adverse effects of the commonly unmet needs of infants lead to various adult social, emotional, and behavioral problems, most notably low empathy. Therefore, it's critical that we learn more about disrupted bonding and how we can prevent it.
Yeah, for sure. Now, if you're listening and you've ever felt overwhelmed, disconnected, or unsure of things, and they feel harder than they ever should, make sure you follow this podcast because we focus on real solutions, not surface level advice. Now, this is really interesting because, studies have shown that countries report a higher quality of life than the US. And we had talked a little about this previously when we started to go over the statistics. But we talked about France and we talked about the United States. But why is that? Why are so many countries reporting a higher quality of life than the US? And we're supposed to be one of the most, privileged and the most, we have the best this, we have the best that. But yet we show that many other countries have a higher quality of life than us.
Well, let's see. The reason we do what we do is, again, it's promoted by so-called experts in the field, and we tend to trust what these experts, whether they're doctors or even psychologists, if we listen to them, we tend to assume again that they studied this, they have advanced degrees in it, so let's do what they say. And again, as I've said before, we tend to do what was done to us when we were children. Again, that's part of human nature, to do what's part of our own experiences and assuming that that's the best way to do things. So I can describe some, examples at least of American cultural practices, but before I do that, I want to mention something here, and that if you are a parent, upon hearing some of this information, you may be tempted to blame yourself for what you did or did not do in raising your children. Please don't. In this society, as in others, parents do the best they can based on what they know, what the culture supports, their personal histories, and other factors. Similarly, professionals who work in related fields are subject to personal, professional, and cultural constraints on their activities. So let's have compassion for ourselves and others. So I can describe examples. Several other American practices, cultural practices that disrupt the mother-infant bond I've described in my book, The Empathy Evolution. So may I go on with the first example?
Oh, please do.
Okay. About 55% of American infants have mothers who work outside the home. Extensive non-maternal care of infants is associated with disrupted mother-infant bonding and other adverse outcomes. A large long-term study of child care found that the more time children spend in any of a variety of non-maternal care arrangements during the first 4.5 years of life, the more problems they have with fighting, cruelty, bullying, and meanness, as reported by mothers, caregivers, and teachers. Non-maternal child care involves separation, unmet needs, disrupted bond with the mother, and increases the likelihood of reduced empathy and potential violent behavior. Okay, if you have any comment or question on that, and then I can move on to another significant American cultural practice.
Oh, no, I'd love to hear the next one.
Okay. Physical punishment, also called corporal punishment, is another adverse American cultural practice. Examples include slapping, spanking, and hitting with objects. Physical punishment conflicts with the recommendations of the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Psychological Association. 66 countries have adopted national policies against physical punishment in all settings. They have found that these policies serve as an effective publication measure. However, in the United States, physical punishment is very common. Researchers estimate that about maybe two-thirds or more of American children have been physically punished by parents.
Yeah.
The evidence shows that physical punishment involves maltreatment, unmet needs, disrupted bonding, potential trauma, and leads to a greater likelihood of reduced empathy and later violent behavior. So any comment on that before I continue?
No, I'd like to hear them first and then we can talk about them. But I think these are great pointers that you're bringing to the surface.
Okay, let me mention birth in this country as an early traumatic experience. 98% of American births take place in hospitals. And in the hospitals, the obstetricians control the birth experience. And these doctors are focused on physical matters, not psychological matters.
Right.
Okay. So it has been the case for a long time now that 1 out of 3 American births are cesarean. And without question, this is traumatic for the infant and maybe even the mother. Yeah. So obviously it's not natural. And the obstetricians, they do a lot of physical testing. And it has been common over decades past, at least, that newborn infants were put into a newborn nursery in a hospital. And that means they're put into plastic boxes where a nurse would watch over many of these infants in their plastic boxes, obviously separated from their mothers.
Right.
And In more recent years, mothers started complaining about this. And again, over a period of time, some hospitals, not all, started what they called rooming in for having the babies be with the mothers after birth. But again, I want to say that this has taken many years to become more aware of, both culturally and medically. And there are, again, still cases where infants are separated from mothers. And infants may become angry about their birth experiences. And then, so if an infant's crying, it's not likely that adults will recognize what the emotion is when the infant's crying. The infant could be sad, the infant could be angry, could be scared, and other things. But, you know, that's not something that typically comes to our awareness. And tests have shown that infants who are angry around birth are more likely to be aggressive at age 6. Okay, now here's another significant study. Children who are angry at age 8 are more likely to be aggressive, get this now, at age 30. So, angry, aggressive tendencies among people start as early as birth. Then I can talk about how does this attachment quality relate to later violent behavior. So as I said, infants may develop anger when their attachment needs are not met. Studies show that unmet attachment needs and an angry temperament in infants correlates with later aggression. This physical aggression directed at peers is highly stable over the first 10 years of life. And as I've said, this can be extended. The research shows that aggressive behavior can be extended to people as late as 30 years old in the research. So the seeds of anger, aggression, and violence are planted as early as infancy and associated with low attachment quality. Another important study here showed that the rate of homicides in this country per 100,000 people is about 7 times the rate of some European countries. Amazing. Okay, a researcher reported that it was possible to predict the peaceful or violent tendencies of 39 out of 49 tribal cultures, and that's an 80% accuracy, from a single measure of mother-infant bonding. Tenuous baby carrying on the mother's body throughout the day for the first year of life. When the infant is not permitted to bond with the mother by being in contact with her body, the likelihood of violence increases and empathy decreases. So body contact is natural throughout history. It's been the usual practice of mothers to carry their babies, and now we could call that a sling or a backpack. However, it's very rare. I live in a pretty populated area here, and I walk around, I drive around, and almost universally I see babies in strollers. And I'm so sad when I see this, because these babies are separated from their mothers when they need close body contact with their mothers.
Right.
I came across a useful URL that's produced by people who support baby wearing. Okay, and it's just maybe 3 or 4 lines of the URL and a little bit of explanation. I have it on a little slip of paper.
Right.
And if I happen to be in contact, like on a sidewalk with someone with a stroller, I say, "Hey, please take a look at this." And they find it, they smile and when they see what it is
Yeah.
and walk along, and I say, "Have a good day," or whatever. So this is important,
Yeah.
baby contact.
So is.
So American childcare practices are based supposedly on rational factors because Americans, men more than women, tend to value the intellect over the emotions.
Yeah.
This preference is consistent with our general difficulty of being aware of and expressing feelings.
Yeah.
Here's a good one. When we don't feel, our thinking is affected.
100%.
Suppressed feelings lead to false beliefs. If we could feel more, our empathy for infants and young children would motivate changing our cultural practices.
Yes.
Also, because cultural practices are common, we assume they must be acceptable and correct for the child. Hey, everybody else does it. It must be the best thing, right?
Exactly.
In addition, some parents believe that denying satisfaction of children's needs teaches them independence, makes children, quote, less needy, unquote, or avoids, quote, spoiling, unquote, our children.
Right.
There is no evidence to support these beliefs. As stated, when we don't feel, thinking is affected.
Right. That is so true. Now, when we go back to the disconnection that trauma caused by disconnection of of parents going back to work, the mothers going back to work. How do we fix this problem? Because in today's society, in order for a couple to actually survive with the economy, you need both people working. And it's very, every so often you'll find couples that where they were, they were lucky enough where the husband was able to earn a substantial amount of money, on a yearly basis to be able to support his family so the mother could stay home and care for the children. But in today's society, that's getting less and less common. So what do we do if that we need that in terms of survival, but yet we don't want to traumatize the child?
That's an excellent question, and my answer, I hope, will be useful to who's watching here. In this country, we have 12 weeks, was it 12? Yeah, 12 weeks of unpaid maternity leave. Unlike other developed countries, which have, for example, in Europe, 1 year of paid maternity leave. This is
Really?
supported by the government. And there's even a few countries that have up to 3 years of paid maternity leave.
Wow.
So this is about national policy and how and when and where we spend our money.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is recognize that if we change our policy about maternity leave, we will do much better for children and mothers and future quality of life for everybody
Right.
once this becomes the primary way of handling dealing with childcare. So that's what's very important is having more childcare. I'm sorry, paid maternity leave to help take care of our children.
I couldn't agree more. I was very surprised when you said that because I didn't realize that other countries give so much time off, which is a wonderful thing because you do need that quality time to bond with your mother. But that's we do need to get on the ball when it comes to our country and what's important and what's not important, because we are a money-driven country, unfortunately. Now, when you talk about what pa parents using physical, like slapping and things like that, we've come from a generation from back in the day. Our parents, it was common. They took out the strap, you got a slap, you got a pull on the ear, and over 70%, I think it's even more really, the percentage of people come from dysfunctional families. And it's because bad habits cycle, and it's hard to break those bad habits. And when you live in an environment for so many years, it becomes common. It becomes the right thing to do because that's what you had all your life, and that's all you know, unless it's brought into your attention that it's causing disruption in your own life or in someone that you love, if you can see it, hopefully, and you break that cycle or that bad habit. Now, what's your advice to people? Because I see now the younger generation, Gen Z generation, realizes this, and they're handling raising children in a very different way than the generation before and the generation before that. But for parents who are in the booming era, and so forth, how do you break bad habits?
Well, the way to break the habit is become aware of the widespread harm that's connected with it. And that's not easy to do personally, because again, our traumas are not in our consciousness. But to get to the point, read my book, you know. If you care about personal and social quality of life, if you care about the widespread violence, racism, political corruption, and mental illness, these are not at random situations. They're consequences of our common cultural practices. So it's important to learn about these things at their origins, and we also need to provide, again, more cultural support to meet the needs of mothers and families. What else can we tell you? Oh, I want to mention quickly a few other things. I know we're getting short on time here, but there's another thing we do in this country that is not common in other countries, and that is male infant circumcision. This is horrible. I mean, imagine quickly now yourself being forcefully restrained, lying on your back, and you can't move your arms or legs. And then someone goes to the most sensitive part of your body, which is designed for pleasure, and cuts off a very pleasurable part of your anatomy. And again, when after baby boys are after they're born in American hospitals, they go around with a form, the attendants, and they ask, the parents, do you want your baby circumcised? This doesn't happen in other developed countries. And sometimes they ask maybe a few times, do you want your baby circumcised? So there's like a hospital pressure to agree to this. But it's a horrible, horrible experience. And just as an aside, when I did my body psychotherapy, I relived my circumcision.
Oh,
It
really?
didn't happen in the beginning, of course. This is a process that takes, an extended period of time. And it was so horrible. I was screaming and screaming for long therapeutic sessions, and repeating that this is the next therapeutic session, because I had not relived the entire trauma of my own circumcision. So also, I might mention, this eventually motivated me to write my first book, Circumcision : The Hidden Trauma, How an American Cultural Practice Affects Infants and ultimately us all.
Wow.
So that book is still available. And I also, since I'm Jewish, I wrote another book called Questioning Circumcision, A Jewish Perspective. And I had it endorsed by 5 rabbis.
Wow.
So, well, when I want to, you know, raise awareness about something, I really go after whatever I can.
Oh gosh, I love it. Now you talk about empathy as the core solution. Like, why is empathy so important right now?
Well, because there's so much harm going on, and we're ignoring it. Again, for the most part, and that's, I'm certainly there are even organizations that support trying to reduce or eliminate some of these traumas. But for the most part, national perspective, these traumas are very common, and we need to get, and it's painful to become aware of them. And again, as I've said earlier, let's not blame ourselves. Let's have compassion for
Right.
ourselves. We're doing the best we can based on our own personal experiences.
Exactly.
So
Exactly.
let's continue down that road, and there's much we can do about learning to improve our child care, and also changing our national policies regarding how we
maternal leave,
take care of mothers' leave. And again, it's just been ignored for too long, and I was so motivated to write this book to bring attention to this, and it's not specifically directed to parents. It's for all of us, because we're all involved in the kinds of harmful practices and painful experiences that are going on today.
Right.
This information has been available for and suppressed for decades, but we can change things. We can make a difference by communicating with others and offering social support to family and friends who may have children in the future. So again, I remind you of my website, ronaldgoldmanphd.com, and I have videos and podcasts and other information on my YouTube channel. And you know, it's there if we make the choice to take a look and learn, and then we can improve the quality of life for children of the future and ourselves.
Now, tell us a little about your book. Tell us a little more about your book, the title, and what it's all about.
Well, again, the empathy evolution, preventing violence, racism, political corruption, and mental illness by creating more caring people. It's intended to, the hooks, so to speak, are these national problems of violence, and as I said. So that's for someone who wants, I mean, we haven't done very well as a nation trying to control violence and the other negative problems.
Right.
So if you're interested in reducing our harmful problems and experiences, the book really describes the origins and the prevention. And I don't know any other book that discloses how these origins and preventions that are so widespread are connected to each other.
Right.
And to our present adverse quality of life.
Yeah.
So that's the intention of my book, to raise awareness about problems and their origins, so we can make different choices, we both personally and nationally, to improve our quality of life.
Where can people find your book?
Well, it is on Amazon. I'm working on more distribution, but That's a work in progress.
Yeah.
I hope you visit the Amazon page and check it out. Let's see, it's available in what the three versions, digital, paperback, and hardcover.
Love it. Now, let's bring this back to the listener. If someone was wants to feel more connected and grounded in their life, what is one thing they can start doing today?
Well, in terms of doing something, I'd say they could start connecting with their representatives, both local and in Congress, to try to get support for paid maternal leave. That's very important. So that's something that relates to a process that we might apply to other issues we're concerned about, but this one is so important because, again, other countries do it up to 3 years of paid maternal leave.
Yeah.
So let's do better by that, and if we do, then that will have a tremendous positive effect on quality of life.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Now, what's something people should stop doing immediately?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is physical punishment. Again, we tend to do to others what was done to us, but the research is so overwhelming that this is harmful.
Right.
And I think I said 66 countries have policies against corporal punishment. So we're the exception, not the rule.
Yeah.
We're the exception in a negative way. So let's wake up and do the right thing.
I agree 100%. Oh my goodness, yes. So, how can we also like build a stronger, healthier relationship with the people around us?
Well, now that we're more aware of empathy, we can simply. There's a couple of ways, at least. You can ask a person, how are you feeling? And then listen attentively and compassionately and express, some empathy. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Or I wish, whatever, something better had happened to you.
Yeah.
But listen to the feelings of others and express your feelings to others. In a way, and there's no blame. Let's be compassionate.
Right.
Okay. We need to connect, and empathy is a way to do it.
Yes, 100%. Now, if you could change one thing about how people think or behave, what would it be?
Well, I think it re relates to the empathy. Connecting emotionally with other people and not just intellectually. So, I mean, we go online and we learn facts, we share facts, but that's not necessarily connecting us with other people. So, sharing feelings, expressing feelings, even a facial expression, and connecting with people that way. And being aware, even write yourself a little note reminding you of empathy and sharing feelings can be helpful.
Right. That's a great piece of advice. For the listeners out there, the challenges we see today just don't happen overnight. They build over time. And that means that we could also, be changed. And I feel it's so important for people to realize that change is relevant, it's needed, and is possible. And, for people who want to get in touch with you, how can they get in touch with you? You mentioned your URL earlier on, but is there services that you provide?
My work is about prevention, not treatment.
I love it. For everybody out there, if this episode resonated with you, make sure that you follow and share it with someone that needs it. And I gotta thank you so much, Ronald, for coming on the show today. You really provided a world of information that is so needed in our society. I think a lot of people do, focus on logic so much and not so much, their heart. And they really should focus on empathy. It's vital, in order for communication, in order for we be able to bond with one another and understand one another in a healthy manner. We need that. And I really, feel it's important too that, you brought up some really great issues where, a lot of these things happen and almost all when we're young, and you showed how young it could occur all the way from birth. So, we all carry trauma within us. It's just how we react to it, how we behave, and to be aware of ourselves and to if we see something not right, be willing to want to change it, because we are the mentors of our next generation. And so if we're not feeling good or we're not doing the right things, it affects us and it affects the people we love around us and the future generations to come. So I really thank you so much for being on the show today. I thank you for what you're doing. I think what you're doing is wonderful. I think you're bringing a lot of awareness and, and change to our world. And thank you. Just thank you so much for everything you do.
Thank you. This opportunity to join you is very important in terms of sharing. So I really appreciate joining you, and I hope people share this podcast with others, and we'll make a difference.
Yes, we will. Thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.